You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. If you're looking for some encouragement, words of hope, and maybe a laugh or two, that's exactly what Richard wants to share with you today. We know life can get pretty busy and complicated, so we're truly grateful you've chosen to take a break and listen to the program. Now, if you're not able to hang out with us for the entire program, you can always pick it back up at our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, you can find all of Richard's talks right there waiting just for you, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Skeptic Tank. Skeptic. What is a skeptic? Let me read you some definitions for this. A person who questions the validity or authenticity of something purporting to be factual. A person who maintains a doubting attitude as toward values, plans, statements, or the character of others. And interesting, this is just straight out of a dictionary. A person who doubts the truth of a religion, especially Christianity, or of important elements of it. It's also a member of a philosophical school of ancient Greece, the earliest group of which consisted of Philo and his followers, who maintained that real knowledge of things is impossible. Also found this quote, a skeptic is a person who, when he sees the handwriting on the wall, claims it's a forgery. That would be a skeptic. I think we all know what a septic tank is. If you've had any dealings with septic tanks, we don't want to hear about that. Okay, so on this deal of being a skeptic, let me just start with a few questions. What issues do you have with Christianity in particular? You say, well, I'm skeptical. I don't believe. Okay, well, then let's get really honest and very specific. And I encourage you at some point to sit down and say, okay, well, kind of like the definition said, a person who doubts the truth of a religion, especially Christianity. Why is it that so many people doubt Christianity specifically? You don't get a lot of pushback on Islam, on a bunch of other stuff, but Christianity gets hammered. And people go at it pretty hard and say, well, this or that. What are your real hang-ups with Christianity? What is your problem with Jesus? What is it you got going on? I'll read you some of these questions. Then the second thing is, if you kind of know what your questions are, how much personal research have you done to try and answer the questions? Because I don't mind you being skeptical. But if you are just skeptical to be skeptical, it's not going to work for you. If you just remain skeptical, sooner or later, you're just going to tank because it's going to go nowhere. So be skeptical, fine, but do some work. Ask some questions. Part of what we are as a church, the mission statement of this church, is disciples making disciples. Part of making a disciple is not just engaging with someone who is a Christian, it's even before they become a Christian and having the conversation. So I'm telling you straight up, if you're here or you're somewhere and you can make it here, we have people here who are trained, equipped, willing, prepared to sit down and have the conversation. Another question, would you be willing to sit down and have a discussion about your questions with another Christian? And that's to my point of who we are and what we're about. If you just say, okay, I am skeptical. I got questions. I got doubts. I got these issues. But if you've got somebody, I'd be happy to sit down. Most of you would say, as long as it's not me, you would do it. But I'll sit down with somebody. If you are a Christian, are you prepared to have such a discussion? And you say, well, no, I don't want to do that. Part of your frustration if you already are a Christian and you're on the planet and you know that you'll die and go to heaven, and so you're like, well, what am I doing here? Part of what you're doing here and why God has not in some cruel way left us down here is you are part of the process. You are part of helping people understand and get there, and you can do some of this. And when you're not doing it, you say, well, I never see anybody become a Christian. You have to engage with someone before they become a Christian in order to see them become a Christian. And that's conversation. I went to one site, and I respect this site, so I'm going to tell you where it is. This is how simple this is on either side, if you're a Christian or not a Christian. Went to josh.org, Josh McDowell, well-known, respected, skeptic himself, did the research, became a Christian, and here's some of the things they cover on one site. I'm not going to read you all of them, but here's some of them. How can anyone believe the New Testament? You know, people always saying it's full of errors and all this stuff. You know what? That one especially, just do a little bit of homework. There are at least 5,500 pieces of manuscripts, and no other Greek literature even gets close to that. Here's a quote by B.F. Bruce. he makes the following observation. The evidence for our New Testament writings is ever so much greater than the evidence for many writings of classical authors, the authenticity of which no one dreams of questioning. No one opens some classical literature and goes, I'm not reading this. What if there's errors in this? We study it in school. You don't even think about that. He also states, and if the New Testament were a collection of secular writings, their authenticity would generally be regarded as beyond all doubt. And you say, well, yeah, but I want to see the original one that, was written out. You're not going to have that, but at some point, you're going to have to trust something. And my argument for people, they say, well, I'm skeptical about all this. I say, okay, can you give me this much? And we'll get to this verse in a minute. Can you give me that you believe there's a God? And if you get that down, there's a God. Then I say simply, don't you think he could get a book written and preserve it? If there's so much writing on this book, and we're going to put all of our focus on it and study it and believe it and stake our lives on what it says, he's going to protect that book. And clearly he's done that. Another question, why should I believe your interpretation of the Bible? And certainly there are little splinters out here and some crazy people, but if you go look at the Bible and look at different Christian groups at least, the core of it is very similar, if not the same. We're not chasing rabbits. We're not going out of these spurious little things. People say, well, but we believe this and this and this and this out here. Stick to the core. There really aren't that many interpretations. You're grabbing at stuff, possibly, just to say, well, this is why I don't believe, because somebody said this and I have a question. Isn't the Bible full of contradictions? Did Moses write the first five books? How could Moses have written the book of Deuteronomy when it contains the account of his death? These are honest questions. You can find answers to these questions. What is the Apocrypha? Why aren't these books found in Protestant Bibles? There's an answer to that question. Why should I become a Christian? The worst hypocrites are in the church. There's not an answer to that question, but there's an answer to that question too. How do you know God exists? How can miracles be possible? Why does a good God allow evil to exist? Great question. But there are answers up to a point even to that question. Don't all religions basically teach the same thing? No, and there's more answer to that question. There's a great one I get occasionally. Where do dinosaurs fit into the biblical story? People say, what about the dinosaurs? There's answers to these questions. It's not complicated stuff. Where did God come from? Is Christianity a crutch? Where did Cain get his wife? There's a big one right there. Anybody really kind of skeptically digging around always throws that one out. There's an answer to that too. Can Christianity be proved? Did Jesus claim to be God? Even if he did make the claim, why should I believe? What is the Trinity? Do Christians worship three gods? Are there legitimate objections to the virgin birth? Don't my good works count for anything? You go, well, this is where we go wrong. Christians hear these questions and go, well, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. Of course so. If as a kid, you don't want your parents saying that to you, so don't say that to someone who's skeptical but searching. We treat people like they're idiots and wonder why they don't want to become a Christian. It's not Jesus they may be against. It may be us they don't want to be around. Why is Jesus the only way to get to God? Were the biblical miracles magic tricks which fooled the simple primitive people? So all these questions, there's a ton more there. Just do a little research. Look up the answers. See what they say. You say, well, I'm skeptical about even the answers to my skeptical questions. Okay, then you're going to tank out someplace. You're going to have to at least give God an opportunity and ask the questions and say, okay, what if there really is an answer? And even when you get to the questions that there really is not an answer on this side, that's where you go, okay, either I'm going to die a skeptic or I'm going to give this a shot. And then here's one more question for you. If you're a skeptic and I could sit down with you and answer all of your questions, would you believe? And if the answer is no, then I'm not going to waste your time or mine. But if you really are searching, you're skeptical, but you really are searching for answers, then it's an amazing conversation to engage in. Because at the end of it, there just might be life for you. Abundant life, eternal life. It's worth pursuing. Now, I'm going to read you some verses. This doesn't always work, but I'm going to try it anyway again. Left to right, Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. And let's dive in here and try to blow through some of these as quick as we can and address some of these issues. Now, the real skeptic would say, great, so you're going to read out of the Bible. I'm not sure I trust the Bible. Well, we kept you listening for a few minutes anyhow. So that's all I got, okay? And I trust it. I trust this book. It has not done me wrong. Do I have all the answers to all the questions I have about this book? No. But at some point I go, you know what? I trust him. And one day, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, a verse in there says, now we see through a glass darkly, then face to face. Now we know in part, then we will know even as also we are known. So I'm good with that. I am not God. You are not God. And you are not going to be able to understand everything and explain everything. That's okay. And we love to take this approach with our children when they say, well, why can't I go to this party or whatever? We say, what? Because I said so. And sometimes that is the answer. And God doesn't have to do any more explaining than we do sometimes when we look at our children and say, that is the answer. Genesis 1:1. You've heard this before. I've said it. It's very important what you do with that verse because it all comes out of this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. If you will at least give that, if you can come up within your brain, say, okay, I will, all my skepticism, I will yield that in the beginning, God, that's where it started, and he created the heavens and the earth. You'd be amazed where you can land from that premise right there, that presupposition. What has God got to do to manifest himself in such a way that you don't lose your mind and go, oh, this all came out of some explosion? I mean, really, really? People who say they believe in the Big Bang and all these things, I honestly think there's hope for them having faith in Jesus because they got so much faith in a crock, it's unbelievable. That's the craziest thing. You know how much faith it takes to believe that it just came out of, you know, if you add enough zeros to it, anything can happen. Billions and billions of years. No, you can't prove that. You can't go back there. Just for once in your life, go, okay, what if there is a God? I believe there's a God. Then you can't imagine what comes out of that one statement. In the beginning, God. Go to Isaiah 46, and let's look at verse 9. And you might say, well, you read this like God really said all this. Because I believe he really did. What do you got? What's he told you lately? Verse 9, remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me. And this is part of what he is and what he does, declaring the end from the beginning. That simple phrase, what is he saying? I've declared the end from the beginning. I can tell you where it started, where it's going to end, and everything in between. Who is that? Who is it that can know that and see things that have not even happened yet? It's a done deal. He declares it from the end to the beginning. And from ancient times, things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. From ancient times, things that are not yet done, God says, this is what's going to happen. Prophecy, the statistical probability alone of prophecies in the Bible coming true, it's not even possible. Because it's not just one thing, it's dozens of things that actually come to pass. You say, well, I don't believe that. Well, if you're on the planet when Revelation comes to pass, you'll believe it. Because the last book in the Bible, Revelation, all that hadn't happened yet, it's going to come to pass and you'll be a believer. Pray to God you're in heaven when that goes down. One more, go over to Isaiah 55. One more in Isaiah. Now, I love that God literally has this written down so that we can hear it and understand he is explaining who he is and how this works. This is Old Testament too, Isaiah 55 verse 8. And he straight up says this, for my thoughts are not your thoughts. I'm not thinking what you're thinking, nor your ways my ways. The way you do things is not the way I do things, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts. So he's not thinking what we're thinking. Sometimes we can agree with what he says, but you are not God. You can't even use the word big. Awesome. There are no words to describe this. How can he possibly keep up with all of mankind, know the beginning from the end, hear all of our prayers, answer them according to his will, track everything? It's mind-boggling, and love us and care for us and take care of details in our life. John chapter 3, go to the New Testament. Now, I don't know that I've done this at all or recently, but let me kind of give you a way to look at this and maybe to explain it that helps me. If I'm sitting with someone, what I'll write down on a sheet of paper is, here's the argument. People say, well, there are many roads that lead to God, but it's all the same God, right? You've heard this argument. Maybe that is part of your argument. Here's what I do. I write down Krishna, Muhammad, Buddha, Jesus, write a bunch of different religious leaders, religions down on a piece of paper, okay? And then I say, okay, here's God, and then I draw a little road to God, and all of these things lead to God, right? Now, here's where it falls apart. If Jesus is going to be one of those options, then this God all these roads lead to is an idiot, and I want nothing to do with him. Because the claims of these religions, Christianity in particular, is that God sent his son Jesus to the earth, born of a virgin, lives a sinless life, dies on a cross, is buried and raised from the dead, and in his life says, I am the way, the truth, the life. No man comes to the Father but by me, makes those claims. So what kind of fool God would send all of these roads that lead to him, one of them being his own son dying on a cross to get it done? You don't need Jesus if everybody else will get you there. And you don't need a God who would make Jesus one of the ways when it cost him his life to get that piece done. Okay, so if you want to be logical in your skepticism, be logical, then think about what kind of box you're putting this God in. I don't want that kind of God. I don't trust that God. A God that has all these roads leading to him and one of them is Jesus, you can have him. I don't want anything to do with him because he doesn't value the life of his own son. And what makes the story so extraordinary is all other religions. You can't even find another one that claims anything different. Every religion is man's attempt to get to God, work to God, do something. If I'm good in this life, I'll come back to something good in the next life. It's this craziness. Christianity is the only one where God comes after us in person and says, you can do nothing to reach me. I have to come to you. I have to make everything possible. I pick you. I give you faith. You got nothing. I choose you. And if you do believe something, it's because I gave you the faith to believe it. That's unbelievable, but believable. So here's the beauty of being a skeptic. If you're still tracking with me and you're still interested, it's possible that God has given you some faith to believe. I believe I'd cash that faith. You say, well, but I'm still afraid and skeptical. At some point, you're not going to be able to take it. You can read every story of every religion in the world. The thing I've never gotten over is somebody died for me. How do you ever get over that? Buddha didn't even claim to die for me. Muhammad didn't claim to die for me. Jesus said, I died for you. Listen to John 3:36. He who believes in the Son has everlasting life, and he who does not believe the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abides on him. I don't care how skeptical you are, that's pretty simple. And people say, well, I read the Bible, I don't understand the Bible. You get that? You better figure that verse out. He who believes in the Son has everlasting life. He who does not believe the Son shall not see life. And then the one I hear all the time is, I just don't think a loving God would send anybody to hell. Well, I'm with you. How in the world is God sending you to hell when he's told you, here it is, believe it? Go to John chapter 20. So you say, well, this is, you're just talking to people who aren't Christians. A lot of times Christians are the skeptics. John chapter 20, verse 24. Now Thomas, called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. So Jesus has been crucified, buried, raised from the dead, and he's appearing and disappearing, which is, by the way, also impossible, but it happened. So he appears, and when he appeared to the disciples, Thomas is not with him. The other disciples therefore said to him, we have seen the Lord. So he said to them, unless I see in his hands, it's not enough for me to just see him. Unless I see in his hands and put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. You got trouble believing? There's trouble right there. The disciples have all said, he showed up, we've seen him, he's alive. Yeah, I don't believe it. I got to see something. And after 8 days, his disciples were again inside and Thomas was with them. So Jesus lets him cook for 8 days on this I won't believe unless I see it approach. Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said, peace to you. Then he said to Thomas, now how would he know what Thomas needed if Thomas wasn't there when he showed up? God knows what you're doing. He knows what you're thinking. And here's what is so crazy cool about God. He knows specifically what you individually need to get where you need to get. He will send a specific person. You'll hear something very specific to your question, to your need. He is merciful. He is kind. So he knows what Thomas needs. Then he said to Thomas, appears again, looks at Thomas and says this, reach your finger here and look at my hands and reach your hand here and put it into my side. You want to stick your hand in my side? Well, knock yourself out, dude, right now. Do not be unbelieving, but believe. And Thomas answered and said to him, my Lord and my God. He believed. Jesus said to him, Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. That's me. I don't require a finger in his hand or my hand in his side. I just believe it because I got nowhere else to go. My skepticisms get me nowhere.
Richard will be back in a moment to wrap up today's talk. But first, I want to share a couple of thoughts with you. Let's be honest. Real life isn't about living some highlight reel for others to see. Most people have deep hurts, questions, and struggles. Well, we get it, and we want to help you in any way we can. So let's keep this conversation going. You can give us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. You can even put in your prayer request right there on the prayer wall. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD or online at richardellistalks.com. And now let's get back to Richard with a final word on today's show.
I have a friend in this room today, a guy visiting that I worked with at another church for a long time. And I called him, hadn't talked to him in a long time, called him. He said his wife had gotten sick, took care of her. His church provided for him while he was taking care of her in a hospital. She died. And then a buddy of his, within days, had talked to him. This buddy called him and talked him through his wife dying. And turns out his buddy was sick, but he never said anything to my friend. And a few days after this guy's wife died, this other guy's wife called and said, my husband died. And he said, "What? Was he in an accident?" He said, no, he was sick. He's had cancer and he died. He didn't want to upset you because you had enough going on. So you go, well, how much can a person take? You know, God loves me, he cares for me. And this is literally what we say. What the hell's going on? What's going on? What are you doing up there? I'm your kid. You say you sent Jesus to die for me and to save me and all this stuff. So what are you doing? Heal my wife. I don't want to do this. Turns out my buddy kept talking to his buddy's widow, and they're sitting over here married today. Now, so you better be careful to your friend's wives. You know, be nice to your... be polite to strangers. You could be stuck with them. So is it good that their spouses died? No. Is God merciful? Yes. Can he bring it all together? Yes. Will we have to put up with any of this in heaven? No. There won't be any more tears. No more sorrow. If you don't believe something, and in this case, Jesus himself, you're going to end up in your skeptic tank forever. Nothing but tears, nothing but sorrow, nothing but pain. You say, well, I don't believe that. Well, I can prove it just as soon as you drop dead, and it'll be too late. Hebrews says this, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your heart. I'm okay with you being a skeptic. Just don't die one. It's too expensive. Listen to this verse, Hebrews 11, verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. you're going to have to believe. You're going to have to trust. You're going to have to exercise the faith that he's given you.
Thanks for tuning in today to Richard Ellis Talks. With the busy schedule everyone has these days, it means the world to us that you would take this time to listen. Let us know how it has touched your heart by calling us at 855-6-RICHARD. You can also connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. One last thing, Richard Ellis Talks is a daily program, but also has daily costs. And being a listener-supported program means we rely on the financial partnership of our listeners, which means you. Maybe you've given to this ministry before or have waited for the right time. Well, we believe that these talks with Richard are making a difference in your life. So this is how you can make a difference to ours. You can contribute by giving us a call at 855-6-RICHARD or at our website, richardellistalks.com. Thank you for your very generous gifts. It truly means so much to us. God bless, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.